Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson producing.
Munson.
Jonnu Smith coming up in a few minutes. John Hines as well. And a revolutionary, just a revolutionary observation that will change your life. Something I've never done to anyone ever. All right, and Munson's got a little problem on Saturday night. We've got to discuss that. Here's my question, though, about the Titans' offense, because we talked a lot in the first hour about Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens' offense, and what they're accomplishing, how you approach it, disguise your coverages. You're going to have to, mush, rush, whatever that's called, keep them in the pocket. You got to hold your gaps and be disciplined, all the cliches about how you stop this type of offense. And the other side of the ball, though, is there's just no possible way that the Titans can win this game with the same type of offensive approach as last week, right? There's just no way 15 passes from Ryan Tannehill and no big plays from your receiving core is like, obviously you want 30 carries from Derrick Henry. That's the goal every time, but you're going to have to complement it this week. I think if you're going to beat Baltimore and you're going to go on the road and beat that team, AJ Brown's got to make a big play. Corey Davis has to make a big play. Jonnu Smith has to make a big play. One of those skill guys that were irrelevant last week because they couldn't throw the football against a very good Patriots defense, that has to change this week, right? You can't win with last week's recipe, right?
It's going to be tough. And we're not asking or advocating for Ryan Tannehill to throw the ball 30 times, because then you're definitely going to lose.
No.
If he throws the ball 30 plus times, because it's either you're coming back trying to win, or you're getting totally away from what you do as an offense. He averages 23 passes per game. That's what he averages.
That feels nice.
Yeah, that's where it needs to be. But what they were, the reason 23 passes work, or it has worked with the Tennessee Titans, is because a lot of those passes are explosive plays. That's why when you look at, how this team, if you start looking at the stats and the numbers of this team, and you start seeing, well, who's averaging what and so forth and so on, you look and you say, well, A.J. Brown's averaging 20 yards a catch. Corey Davis is averaging 14 yards a catch. You start seeing Khalif Raymond averaging 18 yards a catch. Ferks was averaging 15 yards a catch. Well, it's because when they do throw the ball, they are throwing it down the field. They are getting explosive plays. The play action get these guys wide open. So that's why when you throw the ball 23 times, it works. So if they can stay within that number, that tells me they're running the ball effectively, or they're running the ball to a point where Baltimore has to bring more guys in the box to stop them. And they're playing off coverage.
Yep.
And they're giving these wide receivers free releases. That's why 23 passes a game work. But if they start, if Ryan Tannehill gets into the 27, 28, 31, then there's, to me, that's a recipe for disaster.
Am I crazy that I want to see Jonnu Smith used, and we'll talk with him coming up in a few minutes, like the Swiss Army knife? Because they've given him the ball in the running game a few times. Like, get him one or two carries. Get him, or even use him as a decoy. But the corners are so good for Baltimore. I'm not saying that Marcus Peters takes chances, right? So I'm not saying that A.J. Brown or Corey Davis can't beat them, or Tajay Sharpe can't beat those guys. I think they can. They're good enough to beat almost anybody, and it's just about being put in the right situation. But I think Jonnu Smith has a chance to make big plays this week, over the middle, down the seam, the way Mark Andrews wants to do for Baltimore. And I think, I just don't think you can win this game. There's a million reasons why it's tough to stop him on defense, Baltimore. But on the other side of things, I don't think you can win a game like this 14-13, which is basically what the game was last week against the Patriots until they scored the late touchdown. I don't think you can just sort of get a lead, score on one big play, and then all of a sudden just like sit on it and try to finish them off. I think you're going to have to win with a couple of explosive plays, and I think these receivers have to show up this week.
Well, they're going to have to.
Now, I guess the question to you is, how do they do that?
Well, it goes back to Derrick Henry. And can Derrick Henry be effective in running a football? I would be surprised if he gets another 180 yards. I see him getting, 100, maybe even over a little bit of 100, over 100. But if he's able to, by running a football, force the Baltimore Ravens to drop another guy in a box or two guys in a box hovering around the line of scrimmage, then advantage Tennessee. Because I believe when you do that, now everybody's obviously preparing for the run. And it's going to cause those linebackers to step up just for 1 second, a half a second. And then those tight ends, Jonnu Smith, can get right behind him. And Ryan Tannehill is good at play action pass and hitting guys over the middle. He did it to Firkser in their first touchdown. He did it on the first down, the big first down late in the game. When they're able to run Derrick Henry, they're able to be more dynamic in the passing game. They're able to do the play-action pass because they're not a conventional. They're not going to beat anybody conventionally just dropping back and throwing the football. Yeah. That's what Baltimore wants them to do because they know advantage Baltimore. They got to run the football the way they have been. But it has to be – there's a difference between running the football – and running the football with effectiveness. You can run the football and the team still feel as if, we're not going to respect that. We're going to continue to do what we do. Because, you're getting 3 yards. Yeah, you get 4 yards. Yeah, you get five, but then we knock you back for a yard. Yeah, you might get one 10-yard, 12-yard run, but you're not scoring. You're just moving the ball down the field, and then we stop you. That's running a football. Running it effectively is 15 yards, 20 yards, 5 yards, 5 yards, boom, 50-yard touchdown. That's running the ball effectively. That makes me then, as a defense, now I got to step up. Now I got to bring an extra one, two men in the box because we're not going to let Derrick Henry just get to the second level and him take off for a 60, 70-yard touchdown. We're not letting that happen. What they did against New England, they had a bunch of rushing yards, but those rushing yards didn't equate to touchdowns. That's what people don't understand. Yeah. Derrick Henry had a phenomenal game, but he only had one touchdown. That game is 14-13 in the fourth quarter. People look at the end and say, it was 20-13. No, yeah. That game was 14-13 in the fourth quarter, and Derrick Henry was having a great game.
Now, you would say New England's defense is better than Baltimore's, right?
Not toward the end. Not toward the end.
Of the season?
Yeah, toward the end of the season. Okay. I think personnel-wise, Baltimore's better. What makes New England statistically better, they don't take chances. Baltimore takes chances. I forget. Wink. What's his name? The defensive coordinator for Baltimore.
Wink Martindale.
Wink Martindale. Wink Martindale is in a long line of Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinators. They take chances. They're going to blitz. Even Dean Pease, when he was in Baltimore, they're going to blitz. You know why? Because they have the personnel to blitz, because they have two guys outside that can cover. They go about it a different way. Martindale blitzes.
It's not Wink Martindale, yeah. Derek.
It's
a DJ from like, that's like a, yeah, it's
no,
like a music
it's
guy.
Wink, it's, what is his name?
I'm looking it up right now.
It's Wink, something, but whatever.
It's not Wink Martindale.
No, it's Wink something. It has a wink in it.
Wait, there's two Wink Martindales? How could there be two Wink Martindales?
It's Don Martindale.
But his nickname is Wink.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I say it's Wink.
No,
yeah.
This can't be
no,
right.
No, they call him Wink Martindale. Yes, that's why I said Wink Martindale. You were right. You're absolutely right.
I can't believe that there are two Wink Martindales.
You're absolutely right.
Wink Martindales?
But they go about it a different way. New England's not going to blitz you and do all this exotic stuff. They're going to bend but not break. They're going to play, they're going to play this disciplined defense. Well, Wink is going to blitz you.
Yeah.
And he's going to take chances. You know why? Because he trusts his guys on the outside. So, to me, their defense, personnel-wise, is better than New England.
Okay.
But New England is more – they want to be disciplined in what they do.
Well, and they're just, like, incredible. Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick. So here's a story from BaltimoreRavens.com. One of the more under-the-radar storylines of Saturday's divisional playoff game against the Titans is, will Wink Martindale meet Wink Martindale? A couple of weeks ago, the 86-year-old game show host told TMZ that he wanted an invite to the Ravens game because Ravens defensive coordinator was named Wink Martindale.
Yeah, I told you. You were right.
I said that to you, and I was like, I'm just kidding. There's no way that that's the – but then I guess it sticks in your brain.
Yeah.
Two Wink Martindales.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a lot of Wink Martindale.
That's too many Wink Martindale.
So we'll find out if he's going to get tickets to the game, I guess.
I'm pretty sure they'll give him a ticket or two.
I think that's true. Apparently it's the radio show host, this jockey Wink Martindale, that wants to go to the Ravens game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other Wink Martindale for Baltimore is a little busy right now.
Yeah.
Trying to stop Derrick Henry.
I was going
to
say, how many Wink Martindales are we talking here?
Because there's
too many Winks going around here, man.
And there's only one. You only wink with one eye. Also, if your nickname is Wink, is it because you wink at everybody all the time?
I don't know.
I hope it's not for any other reasons.
Yeah, it's blinking when you do both eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a Blink Martindale somewhere? I can't believe I second-guessed myself when you were like Wink, and I was like, Wink Martindale, yeah. And I was like, no, that's a TV person. That's a radio personality. What am I talking about?
You are right.
Apparently, they want to be buddies, though.
There you go.
I should have trusted myself.
All Winks got to stick together.
Yeah.
There's only
so few of them.
There's only... All right. Jonnu Smith, a big part of the offense and what they're going to have to do to attack that Ravens defense and create some big plays. Jonnu Smith, the explosive athlete for the Tennessee Titans, a guy that is going to have to make some plays. We'll talk with him when we return right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here, Marquise Munson producing, and Titans Ravens, of course, this tiny little football game that's going to take place on Saturday evening. Jonnu Smith, tight end for your Tennessee Titans, joining us here on Morning Drive. Jonnu, welcome to the show, man. Congratulations on the big win against New England. You got a lot of work still left ahead of you. My first question for you is, the game last year, two different quarterbacks on both sides. You know, you've got different coaches in different places, different coordinators. Is there anything you guys can take from what you saw last year against this Ravens team and use it this year? Or is it just sort of burn the tape and move on and focus on a new team?
First off, man, thank you guys for having me. It was funny that I got my guy told me yesterday that you guys wanted to talk in the morning. I said, they messing up my morning routine, man. But it's all good.
we do appreciate it.
It's all good. Nah, man, it's all good. Trust me. But, definitely. As always, scratch the tape and move on. Maybe some things that they've done differently and definitely some things that we do differently, as a team. And, it's a new year. It's a new year. We just, focusing to establish a new identity. And, of course, you can maybe take bits and small pieces here. But, last year was last year. And, as this is a week-to-week league. And, the game that happened before, you either can dwell on it or you can move on from it. And, from experience, you would see that winners, they move on from it, no matter if it's a winner or loss. So.
Now, Jonnu, you've come into a situation where all through the season you've been here, you've been a winning organization. Two out of the 3 years you went to the playoffs, so you don't know anything about not winning football games. Is there anything you can take from your first year when y'all went to the playoffs and that experience where you won a game that you probably many didn't see you winning and you went on to the second round? And it seems like this year's sort of kind of working out the same way, where there are a lot of doubters when you went to Foxborough, you win that game, and now you move on. Is there anything you could take from that first year and your experience in the playoffs to now?
Yeah, I just feel like winning, winning in the playoffs, it was a sense of togetherness in the locker room, a sense of belief amongst, everybody that was, inside of those walls that we walk into every day, because nobody else believed in us, nobody thought we could get it done. And just from, being there, you know, 2 years ago, and being here now, you know, I just feel that same sense of brotherhood and you know, and actually, you know, more of it. And, you know, I think that that's key in team games. You know, I feel like that's probably the biggest key to winning is togetherness and, you know, playing for one another. And, you know, that's kind of what we hang our hat on, man. You know, we're brotherhood. You know, we always, you know, make sure that we are, you know, trying our hardest for the guy next to us. And, you know, whether it be, you know, whether it be, you know, an assist play, you know, you may not even be on a play all the time, but just, you know, just being able to be selfless, man, and put the team before yourself. You know, that's something that I definitely see that we've had 2 years ago that, you know, that we have now and more of it.
Jonnu Smith joining us here, Tennessee Titans tight end, and in a locker room with 50-something guys, you're going to have a million different personalities, and you yourself, every player comes into the league, and you kind of have to find your way, find your voice, find how you fit into the offense, all that stuff. Derrick Henry, yourself, some of the younger guys, you guys have certainly developed and become more leaders on these teams. Is there a moment for you where you sort of realized, like, hey, I'm comfortable now at this level? Like, I know you were playing really well, then you get hurt last year. You obviously had a really good season this year. Is there a point for you in your career where you look back and you go, that's where something clicked. It felt comfortable for me, and now every single play I'm excited to go make something happen?
I won't necessarily say it was a particular point. You know, I've just always been a confident guy, man, since I've, you know, played this game. You know, at the age of 5 years old, I just loved the game and everything that came with it. I would just say just taking advantage of my opportunities when they're presented to me. I've always been a confident guy, knowing that the sky's the limit for me. And, you know, I've just, you know, been you know, working hard and, you know, just trying to hone in on all the details that my position requires just so I can be capable when that time comes to make those plays. You know, when they call for me. So, you know, I would say it's a, you know, a combination of, you know, a lot of things, you know, opportunities and, you know, just hard work and just, you know, waiting for the, you know, the right moment to, you know, to progress.
Now, you guys, we know the problems that is presented to you guys as defense with Lamar Jackson. But you guys, as an offense, you've been running the football very effectively. In the last half of the season, you guys were the best offense, I believe, in the National Football League in throwing and running the football. What are some things that you guys see in Baltimore's defense that you got to take advantage of?
Well, they got a lot of guys that can play really good football on that side of defense, on that side of the ball. You know, we're just going to try to, you know, we're just going to play our brand of football, man. You know, it's not anything special that we're going to do. We're going to play our brand of football. What's been winning us games is what's going to, you know, that's what we're going to continue to hang our hat on. And, you know, we're going to try to take advantage of, you know, what the opponent gives us. This league is so small. When we're talking about the margin of error is so small. And, you know, you can't hand them anything, you know, because that's how you easily lose games. So we're just going to play our brand of football and execute and just be smart and play physical, man. That's what we do. And that's what we've been doing, you know, all year. That's what's been winning us games. So we're not going to try to do anything different but, you know, play our brand of football.
Jonnu Smith joining us here, Tennessee Titans. Why has Ryan Tannehill triggered this offense into what it's become today? Why has it been so successful?
I think it's, you know, it just takes all 11, man. You know, it's not one guy that I would say that's just got this offense rolling, man. It's everybody, you know. It's everybody that takes the field, you know, all 11 that's on that field that takes the ball snap. Don't get me wrong, Tannehill's been outstanding, you know, and that's an understatement. He's been awesome. He's been great, you know, along with a lot of other guys that, you know, been making his offense go. You know, having weapons like that, you know, it's a huge, huge advantage. You know, having dangerous weapons, you know, that we have on the offense. But, you know, I would say it takes all 11, man. Just playing together, like I said earlier, just having that togetherness and you know, wanting to play hard for the guy next to you.
Now, you guys, you talk about Ryan Tannehill, and you're right, it takes all 11, because if one guy messes up on offense, then the whole play could be a disaster. But you guys have turned into an explosive offense because you're not throwing the ball much. But when you do throw it, man, it is down the field, and guys are breaking tackle, whether it's A.J. Brown or yourself or Davis. How fun is that? How fun has it been for you guys, the skill guys, the receivers, and the tight ends?
Oh, man, it's been a ride, man. It's been a ride. You know, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, growing up in, you know, one of those things where you've always wanted to be a part of, man, in this league, just being able to be a part of the explosive offense, mm-hmm. and able to make plays and just having fun and celebrating with the guys, man. It's like the dream, man. You know what I mean? Something that you just dreamed of always as a kid. And we got a long way to go, man. This ride is not over. But, you know, just going off of what you said, man, it's been a heck of a ride. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, continue to winning with this with the guys around me, the guys in that locker room, man, because, you know, that's what it's all about.
Johnny Smith, tight end, Tennessee Titans. Who has better fashion sense, Derrick Henry, Roger Saffold, or A.J. Brown?
Man, so I guess they all got their, you know, they own ways of dressing. I would categorize them, though. I would definitely categorize them. I won't say one guy's the best. It's kind of like what you're looking for in that day. You know, if you're looking for some wow, what is that? You might want to, you know, talk to Roger. You know? And if you're looking for something out of, you know, Saks Fifth or, you know, Nordstrom or something, you might want to holler at D. Henry. You know what I'm saying? And the same with AJ, man. You know, the same with AJ. But, yeah, those guys, you know, they always coming, you know, before the game with something that's definitely going to turn your head like, oh, what is this guy wearing or something like that. You know what I mean? But, they all unique in their own different way, you know.
Jonnu, thank you, man. We do appreciate you breaking up the morning routine for us. Best of luck against Baltimore. I know the city's rooting for you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday.
All right, man. I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yep. Jonnu Smith, Tennessee Titans tight end. And, yeah, if you're looking for something a little out there,
Saffold is the guy.
Talk to Big Rod. His stuff is crazy, man.
I don't know what it is.
You're the fashionista.
But I don't know what it is that he wears. I don't have an idea.
It's like some fancy music designer down in, like, Leaper's Fork or something that does all his stuff for him. So, I don't know. You know what it is? You're the Nordstrom guy. You and D. Henry.
Man, I don't know what Saffold is. I don't know.
He's a left guard. all right, we go from tight end for the Tennessee Titans playing in a playoff game to John Hines coaching one hockey game for the Nashville Predators. We'll talk with the new Nashville Predators head coach when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Join Jared and the GM this Friday from 2 to 6 p.m. at Wyatt Johnson Ford at 646 Thompson Lane in Nashville. Also, Chase McCabe is headed to Baltimore this weekend for divisional round coverage.
Watch out, B-more.
I am terrified.
The chaser.
The constable showing up unchaperoned, unsupervised, which is all brought to
unhinged.
You by... wow, that took a turn, which is all brought to you by Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, and Bojangles. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. We also have a bunch of tickets we can give away for the Nashville Predators here in just a little bit. I don't know. We'll talk with Coach John Hines. We're waiting on the coach to hear from him. I just don't know what you learn, and we'll ask him this. I don't know what you learn about a team in their first game. It was either going to go one of two ways. Like, they were going to come out with their hair on fire and play like absolute maniacs, or it was going to be a really tough slog against a great team, the Boston Bruins, without two of your best defensemen, Fabro and Ellis, on, you know, not playing. And I think you expect a little bit of discombobulation to start, and that's just sort of the way I think a coach who got to town like that morning and then coached a day that night, you know, had to do. So it'll be fascinating to watch. I think we've already seen some major differences, though. Mm-hmm. From a personality standpoint, at least with the media, between Peter Laviolette and John Hines. And I think that is something I think Predators fans can be very excited about.
I mean, he seems a little bit more engaging now. I mean, it was his first press conference, and, right. You know, and then he, you know, first opportunity to be interviewed after a game as the head coach. So things might be different. Now let's, you know, interview him. Let's see him 15, 16 games in and see what this team is and see how he responds as a head coach. And I'm pretty sure he will respond just like any other head coach. If they're doing well, then, you know, it comes out and he's a little bit more upbeat. But if they're not and there's some problems that are going on or problems that we have seen, they consist, then he's going to come out in his interviews and it's going to be a little bit different.
And I'd like to get his thoughts on this, but I assume it feels like the timing, and I think Sean Henry echoed this yesterday when we spoke with him, that, you know, the timing, there's never a good time, number one, to make a move like this for anybody, the new coach, the old coach, the organization, the fans. It's never really a good time. But I think the idea that you could have six games to look at your team, learn about your team, and then take a break, because the All-Star break gives you 4 or 5 days off to sort of analyze what you've seen and then come back and implement some things that you think need to be changed or fixed or tweaked or whatever, I feel like that actually does set up really nicely for him to get a quick little sample size on what this team is, who they're about. Certainly he's coached against the Predators and has scouted the Predators, but it's different when you're the head coach. And of course, we'll ask him this when he gets here, but I to me that feels like a really nice – it's laid out sort of well for him to learn about the team, take a break, and then implement some of the stuff that he wants to do to put his stamp on the roster after the All-Star break.
Yeah, but I I'm going to echo what I said yesterday. I think you're going to see, you know, the true change next year. Even with 40-some games left or 40, 39 games left in the season, you're not going to get – the fullness of Coach Hines. I just don't think it's just not enough time. It's enough time to potentially turn the season around, but it's not enough time for him to implement, you know, his philosophy, his true philosophy and how he wants the building to operate, let alone the team. I think you're going to learn more of that next year. You're going to see his personality more next year. These guys are going to be able to figure him out and know what he exactly wants once they have an off season with them. That's what any coach.
And certainly the reason he was selected, a part of the reason, is that there was a lot of familiarity between David Poile and you know, Jeff Kelty, and of course the connection back to John Hines in New Jersey. There's just there's a lot of overlap between how these guys, where and how and when these guys have all worked together and the people that they've known. So there was a lot of knowledge there. So I don't think there's any stone unturned necessarily, so to speak, for David Poile when he made the decision to hire John Hines as the replacement for Peter Laviolette. Again, it's the first time David Poile has fired a coach midseason since like 1994 or something. Like, it's been, you know, he hasn't done this in a really, really, really long time. And so it's new. It's not uncharted territory for him, but it's just very different and very new from his sort of modus operandi. And I think that's, you know, I think it was again, like I said yesterday, and like I always say, there two things can be true. We can remember Peter Laviolette for all the great things he accomplished and the value that he brought to this organization. And also say to ourselves, you know what, it might have been time for a new messenger and a new leader, and I think that's what the Predators did. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both.
Well, I mean, you see it across leagues, whether it be with players or not. You rather do it a year before than a year too late. So you see Bill Belichick, he does it all the time. You know, he ended up releasing guys a year before they
which
take
is what
that
makes
decline,
this Brady thing even more interesting
than waiting a year after.
So they had their first practice yesterday. Obviously, this is what makes hockey so strange. He coached a game before he coached a practice in the NHL, which is just so crazy to think about. This was his commentary. John Hines, Predators head coach, he had a comment yesterday. Adam Bingen, I believe, asked him about sort of owning the middle of the ice. This is what the coach had to say.
Well, is we want to own the middle. So, for example, like off the line rush, we want to make sure that we have a hard penetrating player coming in between the 2D driving to the net. We want to make sure in the offensive zone that we have players that get inside the dots, around the net front, in the high slot area where it's dangerous to be able to play. And then defensively, you want to make sure that, you know, through the neutral zone, you're not giving up middle entries in your defensive zone coverage, that your slot's covered, you're on defensive side body position, meaning between the man and the goal. And I think when you can win the middle of the ice, a lot of times, you know, your percentages go up to score, and they decrease to your goals against.
Now, I didn't want to play that because I expect every hockey fan to understand everything he just said. Because he went deep in the weeds there on strategy, body positioning, location of the ice, you know, strategy on attacking, defensive pairings, all kinds of stuff in that quote. I did not play that because I think that there's some revolutionary idea about controlling the middle of the ice. That's like controlling the middle of a chessboard. Everyone knows that's what you kind of have to do. The reason I wanted to play that for Predators fans and for everyone else is to show you how different that right there is from what we've heard from Peter Laviolette for the last 5.5, 6 years. And that is an open and honest explanation about strategy, about belief, about sort of, hey, this is how we want to do things. And it's not that Lavi didn't do that sometimes. He did occasionally. But Lavi wasn't, he was closed off. He's always been that way. He was that way with Carolina. He was that way with Philadelphia. He was that way with injuries here. He's always been that way. And you know, Adam asked a good question, and John gave a great answer. And I think that is a refreshing thing to hear from the Predators head coach because, again, like I said, you don't just throw – because Peter Laviolette's not here anymore. You don't just throw away all the accomplishments. That's just stupid to do that. He was such a meaningful part of this organization. But it is going to feel different to listen to a coach talk now. And I think one of the biggest differences is going to be this guy's willing to tell you what he's thinking and what he's feeling and what he means. And how does that help fans in this city understand his strategy and his scheme a little bit more because he's willing to actually talk about it? So I wanted to play that because I think that's a more open and honest answer in one practice than I maybe got from Peter Laviolette. And, you know, he gave us a really good answer early in the season, Lavi did, about not giving up too many goals. So occasionally we saw glimpses of that from him, but it just wasn't his style.
Yeah, I think Peter, he gave you, I think the... And I'm not saying that Peter wasn't honest, but coaches just like to hold things close to the vest.
They're paranoid.
Yeah, I'm going to say the most open he was at the end of the season last year when he was explaining the power play and things 100%. He had done and all this other stuff. So that was the most open and transparent we have seen Peter Laviolette up until that point.
Which is why it was a story, because it was like a six-minute answer.
Because he answered
giving
it,
us details.
And he was trying to give you everything
we were
that
all
he
like,
could.
What?
Because he wanted you to understand
right.
what he was trying to do and why things possibly didn't work and whatnot. And I believe Coach Hines, he wants to do that at the beginning because, you know, there's a bunch of whys. Why did you make the move now? What makes him different from Lavi? All these whys. So if you got a bunch of whys, then I need a because.
Yeah.
And he's going to give you the because right now. Because if he walks in here and you ask the whys and he kind of skirts around it, you're going to say, well, why is he any different from the last coach?
Right.
He's not giving us anything.
If he gives you Belichickian answers, it doesn't make you a good or bad coach.
Exactly.
I'm just saying it's going to be a different experience for fans. And I think it's refreshing to hear a guy. Because here's the thing. I know these jobs, coaching jobs, players, you know, roster spots, any sport, they are incredibly high risk, high value. You're going to get paid a lot of money, but it's extremely competitive. It's very hard to keep and maintain and be successful in these jobs. Again, any coach in any sport, any player on any roster. I get how cutthroat the industry is. It's also a game. It's a sport. It's a game. You don't have to take everything so seriously. You can just listen to a guy ask a question and be like, oh, I'll just tell you the answer. Like, it's not, you don't have to be so, like, this isn't like national security, okay? Like, what Lavi was keeping from everybody weren't state secrets, okay? Uh-huh. Like, I know coaches are paranoid schizophrenics and they want to keep everything close to the vest, like you said.
To them, it's always classified.
And I get it. And listen, $2.5-3 million jobs are expensive jobs, and you know, the risk is high and the reward is high, and I get why coaches are that way. It's the worst in college football. College football is the worst. Those guys don't say a stinking word about anything. In fact, that's why I love Derek Mason will actually tell us, you know, stuff. Like, that's what makes him interesting. But I get why you're like that. It was refreshing to listen to John Hines talk about his practice yesterday because I got to learn something about what he thinks should work, what the strategy should be, And it was refreshing to actually hear that. So that's, I think that's a reason why fans should be excited. It doesn't mean he's going to win a bunch of championships.
No.
It doesn't mean that Lavi was a bad coach. It doesn't mean anything. It just means the experience is going to be different for Predators fans than it was with Peter Laviolette. I think we're going to know more about the team, learn more about the team, understand more about the team. And that, I think, makes the fans' experience more fun and more enjoyable. So, Efferding's still waiting for Coach. So, if we get to Coach, great. Can't wait to hear from him. Would love to talk to him. If not, there is another football game being played that people in this area of the country care a whole lot about that no one said a stinking word about in like 2 weeks.
Seahawks and Packers.
Hey, I do care about that game, all right? So, settle down back there. That onside kick a couple years ago in Seattle, people don't forget, okay?
I've
clearly let it go,
Kansas
Marquise.
City.
I've let it go. Yeah. Clearly.
XFL starts in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I can't believe that no one's talking about this game. So
let it go.
Don't you start.
The LA
okay?
Renegades.
I got so XFL. Much damn frozen in my house right now. Don't you bring it into my workplace. This is my safe space away from Elsa and Anna and, as my daughter calls them, Crisscross. We'll be right back. John Hines is going to join us right here. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson producing, and the new Predators head coach, John Hines, joining us here on the show. Coach, I know it's been a whirlwind for you, so thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time. We do appreciate it. How difficult is it to jump right into a freight train that's moving along at 100 miles an hour? How difficult is it for any coach in any situation to jump in midseason, try to get to know players, maybe make some tweaks or changes over time? Just try to explain to fans how hard that process really is.
Yeah, sure. First of all, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. And, coming in, it's the challenge is really, as you said, is that the players are used to doing things a certain way, used to playing a certain way. And when you come right in, there's limited practice time at the NHL level. So what we're really trying to do is, one, it's important to be able to understand the team, get to know the players, what makes them tick, who should be playing where, who deserves to be playing in certain situations. And that's a challenge because you're thrown right into the fire. I think from a tactical standpoint, systems-wise and things like that, you can make some tweaks on video. It is a little bit easier, I think, at the NHL level, just because the players are, they're so bright. They're the best of the best. So your ability to teach, I think, is important. But just implement little changes that they can do and play free. And a big emphasis for us right now is really going to be in our defensive zone structure. And, our special teams have to be better. So we're going to put a heavy emphasis on those and trying to get those going in the right direction here.
Now, Coach, in the world of football, typically if a player gets traded or something like that, sometimes it's easier for him to make the transition at a particular position because maybe the offenses are the same or the terminology is closer together than apart. For you as a head coach, can you say that about when you're coming in and midstream and trying to coach a bunch of guys? Is it a little bit easier? We talked about the difficult part, but is it a little bit easier that you have a system and maybe some of these guys are familiar with this system because maybe it's some of the things they're already doing as of now?
Yes, that's exactly correct. Is that there's some things that are exactly the same that you're not going to change at all. And then there's other things that you are going to change, but these guys have probably played every system through different coaches coming up through the ranks. So now a lot of times when you just implement or make some slight tweaks, a lot of the players probably have done it before. It's just it's almost just like reteaching some things, and then it turns on their brain. Like even yesterday in practice, a couple of guys were like, "Okay, yeah, I used to do this," or "Yeah, I understand that, I see that," and that's. I think the easier part for sure is that you don't have to change everything when you come in because there were some very good things in place for sure. But then you have to put your own stamp on it and try to do some different things to try to get the team to be able to play better and possibly more to the strengths.
John Hines joining us here, new Predators head coach. And you guys in New Jersey were very good on the penalty kill over your time there. You just mentioned the focus on special teams and you want to make some changes. So what – number one, what is the key, just in general, what is the key to a great penalty kill? And then number two, what do you want to see done differently with this unit?
Well, we'd like to, first of all, I think your attention to detail on face-offs is very important, because every power play, every penalty kill starts, obviously, with a face-off in your defensive zone. So when you win the face-off, what's your plan to be able to get out and get a clear? And when you lose the face-off, you have to do a really good job of understanding what the other team's trying to do, if they're trying to run plays or get to their set. And then you have to be able to understand how to play that right off the bat. Second thing is strong clears when we have the opportunity to pressure and get pucks and clear the puck to eat time off the clock. We'd like to be a little bit more aggressive with up-ice pressure. So when the other team's going back for the breakout, if we can be more aggressive and try to disrupt the breakout, all those little components eat time off the clock and allow you to play less time in your D zone and allow the offensive players on the other team less time to be able to set up and make plays. And then finally, I think it's very important that you do not expose the middle of the ice. So what I mean by that is that there's not seam passes, you know, from one side through our box to the other side where they can get one-timers and easy looks at the net. So we got to be tight, positionally sound, excellent stick detail. We want to be in shot lanes. And then when the puck gets delivered to the net, your net front coverage and the assignments have to be bang on. They have to understand that you can't give up second chances, rebounds, and easy tap-in goals down around the goal.
We're talking to Nashville Predators head coach John Hines. He's the first coach that coached the game this year before he even coached the practice. So kudos to you, coach.
that was an interesting one, I can tell you that, guys.
Absolutely. This situation here, coach, I almost look at it as when you have a bunch of high school kids and you're trying to figure things out and you just roll the basketball out and say, hey, guys, just play. And you're just watching them. And then you kind of figure it out from there. The first game that you played, coach here the other day, I know the win is important. You didn't get the win. But were you able to just, okay, these guys are playing. They got a system. I may tweak it a little bit. But let me just watch and see what this team is truly about. And maybe I can tweak it from there.
Yep, yes, that's exactly what it is. And that's what we told the players, that I really didn't disrupt their game day routine, just how they ran their meetings, who ran the meetings. Both special teams did their thing. And 5-on-5, to me, it was more about, you know, having them go out and play, execute what they know, and let's see them really compete. And a big part, you know, of coaching is to understand the team's mentality of you know, how do they handle adversity in the game? How do they do on a start? What happened on certain things when we do get a penalty and the penalty kill's got to go over? What's the reaction and feel of the team? And then the other part is it's a clean slate for the players in the sense of I want to see how guys compete, how hard they play, and do they execute the system that they were playing? What's their attention to detail? Those are all invaluable things. And I really felt did not like the fact that we didn't win the game, but I really felt after the game that there was clear things that needed to work, and I felt better about understanding who the players are. And I think even after tonight's game, I'm going to have a better feel of the players, of who should play with who, or do we want to make tweaks in that area, who needs a strong push from me. And that's a big part of coaching too. But you only get that through going through the process with the guys.
John Hines joining us here. You're just as much psychologist as you are X's and O's analyst, that's for sure. That's the nature of coaching in professional sports these days. Coach, you're going to Chicago. Now, let's get to know you a little bit. That's a lot of hockey talk we just had, so let's see if the fans can get to know you a little bit more. And you are aware of how Predators fans feel about the Blackhawks, correct?
Yes, yes. Not good.
All right, I just want to make sure. All right, so secondly, you're sort of... Again, getting to know you a little bit here. You're a family guy. You got three daughters. I have two daughters. They are very, very young. If you can give me any advice on how to raise a household full of women, please, I'm all ears.
I hope you have a very stable wife. it's been good. You know, it's three girls, 14, 13, and 9. And, you know, one's in eighth grade, one's in seventh, and one's in third grade. And they're all, you know, they're all very different. They're all active in sports and things like that. But I guess, you know, the biggest thing I think is that, you know, communicate really well with them, be there for them, You know, and for me in the job I have, I have to rely heavily on my wife. She's a saint.
I'm writing all this down, Coach. Communicate well.
Now, Coach, we know you were excited about the opportunity to come here and be a part of an organization that we considered a gold star in how an organization should be run in any sport. So I know you were excited to come here and coach this team full of really good guys and really good players. But how excited was your family? You got three girls. I know they're excited to be in such a wonderful city like Nashville.
Oh, they were tremendously excited. And it's funny. It was a long range of emotions because it was early December when things didn't work out in New Jersey, and mm-hmm. they were upset about that, and then. It's a true story. What I said in the press conference on Saturday, this weekend we were driving around. I was taking my daughter to her basketball game, and she was playing music on my iPhone and in the car. And she put on Luke Bryant, and we were just talking about different things. And she said, "You know, Dad, Luke Bryant lives in Nashville. You know, did you know that we should try to go there someday and this and that." And then honestly, when they came back, and I told them that we got the job. She jumped up and down, and she's like, "I knew it. Yeah, so I'm gonna go there." Came and gave me a big hug. They're tremendously excited to come. And my wife's very excited, and everything you hear about Nashville, be able to come, raise the family, the city, the people in general, and even me being here for about 48 hours, you can just see, everyone I've run into is so supportive. The fan base is great, and just the type of people that I've been able to meet. Have been fantastic. So we're certainly excited as a family.
Yeah, not many people. Once you move here, not many people like to leave. John Hines joining us here. So what are you interested in outside of hockey? I know you're like dead focused on trying to learn about your team and beat the Blackhawks and get this team into the playoffs. We know you got all those responsibilities, but just if you had an hour, a day off, whatever, like what is it that, are you a golf guy? You listen to music, sort of. What is it? What do you do? Who are you off the ice and outside of hockey?
Yeah, no, first and foremost, I do enjoy spending time with my family. I do enjoy going to my kids' activities, spending time with them, spending time with my wife. It's just that time and activities, with a young family is I really do enjoy that. And then the other one, I really like to golf. So a lot of times in the summers, I golf. Mm-hmm. Quite a bit. I enjoy getting out on the course and playing, and that's a big one. And the other one, I like to study and read and just like look up different things on coaches, and that's kind of how I spend my off time, is really family, golf, and then kind of studying the game and reading about different coaches and things like that. It's always trying to find ways to get better in that area too.
Do you have how about this for Predators hockey fans out there? Do you have a book recommendation so that they can kind of see the game maybe more through how you see it? Do you have a recommendation for everybody?
Let me see. I might have to get back to like a hockey book. You mean?
Well, I know like Bill Walsh's book is like sold out and you can't find it anywhere. And I know there's a lot to learn about. I'm just curious. Like it doesn't have to be hockey necessarily. Just I don't mean to put you on the spot, Coach, but I'm going to do it anyway.
A big part of the philosophy that I have is the Bill Walsh book. I do have the book. The Score Takes Care of Itself is the actual title, and it really talks a lot about culture. The importance of the culture off the ice or off the field rolls into how you go about your business on the field or on the ice, and that in professional sports, everyone talks about. We all talk about what the end result is, but at the end of the day, it's really the process that you go through. You can't control whether you win or lose the game. But what you can control is how you prepare, how you practice, how you play the game. And over time, if your process is correct and your culture is correct, you're going to be able to have a sustained winning record, winning team, and ultimately a championship.
Well, Coach, we do appreciate it. We know you're busy. Big game tonight. Best of luck against Chicago. Nice little, just a breezy road trip for you guys here to get your tenure started as the Predators coach. We do appreciate it, and best of luck the rest of the year, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Absolutely. John Hines, head coach for your Nashville Predators. I want to react to that, but Joe Rexrud is going to join us when we come back.
We can react to it after
Rex. We will react after Rex. It's the new title of the show. React After Rex. Joe Rexroad when we come back. Special thanks to John Hines, off and running here as the Nashville Predators head coach as they go to Chicago tonight on national TV. Joe Rexroad from The Athletic when we come back.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.